Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Flash Gordon number 1 through 8, published by Dynamite in 2014. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, Flash Gordon has been around as a property since the mid-30s.
Yeah, it's a really old property.
It's been done as... It started as a comic strip, I believe. It's been done as movie serials, a movie in 1980... Comics by, obviously, here at Dynamite. I think DC's also done it a time or two. It's probably been to a few other publishers as well. I don't know if there have been novels on it, but it's been around the block quite a bit.
Yeah.
My familiarity with Flash Gordon is all of that kind of, not all of it, but some of that secondary material. I don't know that I have ever even seen, much less read, much of any of the original comic strip stuff, so the source material. And that really kind of hit home for me as I was reading this, and in preparation for this, my sister and I watched the 1980s movie.
Wow. Okay.
And we've done an episode on that. It'll come out in another week or two after this gets released. But between the two, and I'm like, you know, I don't know how much of this in either the movie or the comic here is from the original canon, or a retooling of it, or a rebellion against it, or what. Oh, and I've also watched the TV show that was done in 2007 on, I forget if it was the CW or the WB or whatever it would have been back then. I watched it when it came out, haven't gone back to it since. So, again, familiar with the secondary material. How familiar are you with Flash Gordon?
It's very vague. I think this is a really, I can't promise that I saw that 1980 movie when I was a kid.
So back in 1980.
Yeah, okay. Long time. So that's a long, long time ago. And I remember he was a character my dad was fond of.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't talk about him and stuff, but it was more, you know, his generation, the baby boomers that kind of grew up as fans of that, and maybe even the silent generation before them. So it was something that was before our time. And so that movie came out. I think my dad took me to it, if I'm not mistaken. And beyond that, I had picked up this series that we're reviewing in 2014, and that's all the Flash Gordon that I can remember.
Okay, so you're in a similar position I am, of a casual fan of it at best.
Yeah, at best.
Aware of, like, the couple of top characters in the property, but that's about it.
Yeah, I knew the bad guy, Ming, you know, stuff like that. That's yeah. Pretty much it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Flash Gordon, Dale Arden, Ming the Merciless, maybe, you know, Zarkov, the scientist or whatever. Beyond that, To me, Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon are both of the same ilk, that for most of us, unless you're of that generation when it first hit big, you're aware that the property is out there, you know, the high-level stuff, but you probably can't name too many characters beyond the title character itself.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And even Buck Rogers, I remember it, but I was so young, you know, it was in and out. But I have a better recollection of Buck Rogers than I do of Flash Gordon.
Well, Flash Gordon had a movie, Buck Rogers had the TV series, but even that was derivative of, hell, I don't even know what the original source material was for that.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know if that was originally a 50s serial, movie serial, or what.
Yeah, that Buck Rogers thing, I just looked it up online. It came out in 1979, so I was probably 6 years old.
The TV show, yeah.
The TV show, so it was when I was really young, but I remember the little robot, beep, 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 you know, making the noise, and...
Mm-hmm.
And them in the white suits. But beyond that, that's a memory so far ago, I don't really remember a lot.
I think having a property like that that's got the name recognition and not much other recognition gives creators a bit of free rein to kind of do what they want to do without being too beholden to the established continuity.
Yeah, I would agree. Because these are characters from Buck Rogers was 1929 and Flash Gordon 1934, a lot of people, you and I included, you could take this story in a direction and have complete contradictions of continuity that happened in 1938, and we would have no clue.
Well, it's funny, because another character from around that same time frame would be John Carter.
That's true, yeah.
So here we have three sci-fi properties, all of which are named after the title character, all of which are the damn near 100 years old, give or take. You know, it's just kind of funny that they are still around in some capacity.
Yeah, just insane that they have that lasting power. Although I feel like they're starting to fade a little bit, even more so. I mean, today, will the Gen Z know about them? I don't know.
Well, I think they've got not so much a lasting power, but a recurring power.
Yeah, they pop up from time to time.
Exactly. It's not like Batman and Superman that once they came out, they stuck around. But these are ones that somebody in every generation or so says, hey, let's take another swing at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's in public domain, just like Tarzan. And every so often we get a Tarzan movie, you know? And boom, there it is.
Are these in public? Oh, I mean, it's old enough. It ought to be.
I would think so. I'm saying that, but I don't know. It just seems like it should be based on the age.
Well, it certainly should be based on the age, but King Features has been around the whole time. They were the ones who published the comic strip, so it's had the legal wherewithal behind it that it may not be in public domain.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But it should be soon if it's not already.
Yeah. It's just kind of funny how you and I, we have such little connection or experience with any of those characters we mentioned, yet we had just enough at some point in our life when we were young that the name's familiar at the very least.
Well, I mean, I'd seen the cover of probably the VHS back in the day or whatever of Flash Gordon. I don't think I ever saw that movie when it came out in the theater.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw it with my dad because I remember at one point I got into Flash Gordon was cool. And so the only thing I can think is I remember my dad used to take me some movies that he'd be interested in. And I'm like, he probably took me to it and I just can't remember the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, just being a kid, you know.
Well, I watched it before reading this. And okay. There were a couple of things in this where I felt they were doing. I mean, first off, there's the high level story of Ming tries to conquer Earth. Flash fights back. It doesn't go well for Ming.
Yep.
I mean, that's the high-level property to a degree, and I don't think that's too surprising to any of us. Flash is the hero. Ming's the villain. He's going to lose.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of things I think that Jeff Parker and Evan Doc Shanner did here that were very much because of the movie, and there were a couple of things where I think they stayed very close to it, like Prince Voltan looked very much and acted very much like he did from the movie, whereas Prince Baron, not at all.
Oh, interesting.
In the movie, Voltan was played by Brian Blessed and Prince Baron by Timothy Dalton.
I wonder why they took it in a different direction for one character versus the other. That's interesting.
I don't know. I mean, to me, the big thing with Baron was he was blue-skinned, which maybe they didn't want to bother to do in the movie or couldn't do, or maybe, I don't know what the character's skin color was like in the original material either.
Yeah, who knows? Somebody does.
Somebody does, but that somebody is not me.
Yeah, or me.
But that's kind of what's fun about this property is I'm coming at it from very much a level of ignorance, whereas, you know, Marvel and DC and a lot of other properties, I've been neck deep in that for decades.
Yeah. It's very different. It's almost like you're reading an indie title, like a creator-owned title at this point.
Very much so. It's funny, though, because even though this was written in 2014, I feel it has an even more modern storytelling sense, because 8 issues here felt like it covered roughly the same amount of material, say, as that 2-hour-ish movie or hour-and-a-half movie, whatever it was, from 1980. And it's not that nothing happened here. But it felt like so much that happened in these 8 issues was surface level roller coaster ride type material.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
Absolutely. It was great. First off, the art was fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, Evan Shanner is just brilliant. It was a easy read. It was a quick read. But I kept thinking, because I mean, I've got very sketchy notes on these. And it felt like, I don't want to say not a lot happened. But it could be summed up very easily, I guess, would be the way to put it.
That's a perfect way to put it, because stuff happens, and it felt, man, I've used this term before, but breezy. It felt light. It felt fun. It felt energetic. It felt like a swashbuckling type tale, even though they're not using swords in this thing.
But that's the era the properties came from.
Yeah. So it's I think they've done a good job, Jeff Parker and Evan Shanner, with this, because they made it feel like it's of that ilk, and it is, with us not having the the baggage that comes along with the continuity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I went into it kind of blind. I knew the character existed, but not much beyond that. And it felt like, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a 1930s thing. I'm like, just like, it feels real to me. It feels like this is something that fans of the property would like, I would think. I don't know.
I can't speak as to what deep fans of the property would think of it, because again, I'm not in that camp. But high marks for accessibility, because they get into the action within a couple of pages. I mean, we get a quick intro of Flash, Dale, and Zarkov, and then bam, we're a year ahead. We're in the middle of the action. They're fighting against Mongo and stuff.
Yeah.
And apparently what happened in that intervening, you know, one-year jump in this issue was the five-issue King's Watch series that this spun out of.
Ah, okay.
And that's where you had the Phantom, Mandrake the Magician, a couple other side characters, all kind of reacting to Ming's attempted invasion of Earth.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
So the pause we get in, I think it was issue 4, mm-hmm. where Dale is giving Prince Baron this exposition dump of Ming's backstory, his attack on Earth and all that stuff, and we got a quick flashback of Mandrake, Luthar, and the Phantom and stuff. All of that was from the King's Watch miniseries.
Interesting. What, did Jeff Parker write that as well?
That's a great question. I don't know. I didn't think to check.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, sorry to throw you a curveball.
No. I should have checked. It's a good question.
It's just because he did such a good job. And I remember there's a follow-up series to this. And I know they pulled Jeff Parker off of it. And yeah, I looked it up online. Jeff Parker did write it. So that would be interesting to read because, like you said, it directly tied into it. And I did not read that, but I understand perfectly everything that happened because of the discourse inside of these books.
Now, part of that, though, was, again, let's pause the story in issue 4 for a little bit to get a couple of pages of heavy text exposition.
Correct.
But they were able to get, you know, 4 issues in before they felt the need to give us that, which is impressive.
Yeah. I really like the character Flash Gordon as they portrayed him in here. He seemed heroic.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed so personable, almost like a magnetic personality. You know, the fighter pilot, this handsome fellow that people are going to be naturally attracted in, a natural leader, just the epitome of what you'd want in a hero.
Well, and they definitely play up that he is a natural athlete in all ways, shapes, or form, almost to the point of being a supernatural athlete at times, it feels like.
Exactly. I think I'd be jealous of this guy if I met him back in the day. Man, I wish I was like him.
Well, he seems the type that could be very dislikable. I mean, he picks up some guy's bow and arrow and suddenly he's a marksman and stuff. That
yeah.
would get really annoying really quick, but he's a very likable character here.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. They make him likable and not a know-it-all, even though he somewhat is. You know, and I'm not saying he's abrasive in that way, but he is just so naturally physically talented and gifted with whatever yeah. he tries to do.
He's physically gifted. I would not say he's a know-it-all.
Correct. Not a know-it-all. He's physically gifted because, yeah, he's not the genius. There's people on the team that are smarter.
Zarkov is the genius.
Yes.
And he lets people know, and he is dislikable.
Yeah, he is.
But also with Flash, the other potentially irritating aspect of this version of him is he's very quick to leap into action.
Yes.
If somebody's needing help, he will go help them regardless of the consequences or whatever. And there were a couple of times where Dale is like, no, shut up, I'm going to speak. You know, and that saves them from a potential fight scene early on.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like the way that he was portrayed and I like what we saw from him. It got me excited enough to where I noticed there was a solicit in the latest previews for a new Flash Gordon series. And it piqued my interest with us doing the back issue spotlight on this when I was pulling out my previous.
Who's doing the writing on that?
That I can't remember for the life of me because I saw it in my book and I saw the preview. And then I went and I read the material later. And so now I got to go back and find it because I can't even remember the publisher that was doing it for the life of me.
Because there's a lot of old properties starting to pop up these days of Gatchaman, Thundercats, Space Ghost.
Exactly. Just weird things that are just popping up left and right, maybe trying to get that nostalgia itch, you know?
Well, nostalgia and known property.
Exactly. There's a lot of risk with comics.
And again, they're mitigating that risk of known property, but not very well-known property.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, Space Ghost, you've got some leeway. People remember it kind of, sort of, but it's not like you're locked into a certain continuity.
That, and also, I would think, a licensing fee on a Space Ghost is much more palatable than a licensing fee like Transformers, like they just did over with Image, you know, taking over G.I. Joe and Transformers. I imagine they paid a lot more money.
I would argue that the Transformers license is worth a lot more.
It is, yes.
Because, I mean, even if you discount the, what, 7 or 8 movies they've done recently, it's still got the toy franchise, it's hitting our demographic, which I think is the main comic buying demographic and stuff, whereas Space Ghost goes back about another decade or two, really kind of prior to when Transformers hit big, and I think a lot of the properties that are coming back are almost defunct cartoon ones. And I'm very excited about quite a few of them. Thundercats so far, what I've read, has been great.
That Space Ghost, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one. There's a lot of potential there. And again, what they're doing here with Flash Gordon was great. What DC did when they had a run with it in the 80s, I think was fun. So if they bring the character back, whichever publisher it is and stuff, that could definitely be a lot of fun. But this goes back to, I don't know enough about the character to know, what is Flash Gordon supposed to be like?
Yeah, I think you and I, after having read this, and you may have a different perception because you saw the movie recently. This is my view of Flash Gordon right now. And if they wrote him as someone less charismatic, less whatever, I might be like, oh, that's not Flash Gordon. You know, it would sit differently with me.
Well, the big difference between this Flash Gordon and the one in the movie is this one is an all-around athlete.
Okay.
So this is the kind of guy, if you had told me he was in the Olympics or whatever, it's like, yeah, I'd believe it. I mean, they don't tell us exactly why he's so naturally athletic.
Yeah.
But the one in the movie was a football quarterback.
Ah, all right. Football.
Very right. Football.
Okay.
There were one or two scenes that were almost ridiculously football.
Yeah, so a very different type of athlete than a guy who can just pick up a bow and arrow and be the best shot.
Yeah, yeah. And again, both versions are fun, and they're very similar in some regards and very different in others. I think this story did a better job setting up Aboria, a little less so with Skyworld, but then also the various beastmen of Ming's army and stuff. Now, granted, some of that we had to pause in one of the issues for some heavy exposition on all of that.
Exactly.
I forget which issue that was, but it was, again, there are a couple of times where it's like, yep, stop, explain things, move forward again. And I granted they didn't spend a page or two doing it, but it was noticeable. But what I liked about them setting up the Beastmen and stuff is this is another case where it's all being explained to Flash. Once he realizes what's happening to these poor people, he steps in, puts an immediate stop to it, and two or three of those specific guys join up with him. Of, you saved me from an even worse fate than what happened to me. I got your back.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really liked that. And I also thought it was hilarious that one of them had a name for the life of me. I can't remember the name. And the other one, it's just referred to as like Rhino Guy or whatever, whatever his name was.
Rhino Guy is, I think, called Mox, maybe at one point. And then it was Thun, the other Beastman guy.
Yeah. And it was just kind of funny that, like you said, they joined up with them. And it was kind of cool also seeing how these people who were allies of Ming, these worlds that have been conquered and had their technology kind of stripped from them, how they kind of rally under the banner of Flash Gordon, hey, you're from Earth, and you guys fought them off. And even though I didn't read that comic, you guys were able to keep your technology, and maybe you can show us the way or be our leader or bring us together. And that was really cool. I'm ready for the fight. You know, let's go.
I think they did a better job of selling why the people were rallying behind Flash here.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a better job setting Flash up in the movie because he meets up with Prince Baron and Voltan at Ming's, you know, headquarters or palace or whatever it was in the movie. Whereas here, Flash has gone off, escaped all of that, and encounters First Baron. Once he's done with that adventure, goes, has another adventure, and eventually hooks up with Voltan and stuff. And I mention all of that because there's a full-page splash in issue 6 where we got Prince Voltan shouting, "Gordon's alive!" which is a very blatant callback to the movie if you've seen it.
Oh, okay.
And it made sense because by that point, Voltan had known who Flash Gordon was, knew Ming was very much against him, had seen Ming execute Flash and was genuinely surprised Flash was alive.
Versus here, it was very different.
Here, the two hadn't even really met.
Exactly. So, that makes more sense if you've seen the movie and read this.
Yeah, there were certain things in issue 6 of this, with the Gordons alive, and then when Voltan was shouting dive or whatever, which is another thing from one of the action set pieces in the movie and stuff.
Yeah.
And again, Voltan looked so much like the movie version, but the movie version was brilliant, so why not?
I really liked Voltan, by the way, and the Hawk people. Mm-hmm. The whole time I was reading that, did you wonder if, like, think about this. Back in, when they were creating all these characters at DC and Marvel, especially DC, because DC's been around a little bit longer than Marvel, I wonder if the people were fans of these properties.
They had to be.
Yeah, these look like Thanagarians. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe this was the inspiration. Someone was like a big fan of Flash Gordon.
Julie Schwartz, among many others, came up through the sci-fi industry.
Yeah.
They couldn't not know about Flash Gordon.
Exactly. And it's not a whole cribbing of it, but he almost looks like a Greek god mixed with the wings, the Thanagarians. I'm like, it's just cool stuff. I loved it. The more we got in this world, the more fun I was having with it. I was like, it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, if this Flash Gordon comic were to come back as a regular series, ongoing series now, I could see picking it up.
Me too. I think it's something to be that different palate cleanse from the whatever we're reading typically, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Flash is, like we've said multiple times, he's just such a likable guy that he almost comes off a little bit Boy Scoutish, but not over the top like a Superman, but he's a very good guy.
Yeah, you can tell he's the hero and why people rally around him. And I think an ongoing series would allow for the exploration of all the planets Ming has conquered, getting to know them and really building up a coalition and stuff.
Exactly. Seeing those people come together and rise up and fight and for freedom, you know, which would be just really cool.
I think it'd be hilarious to take this kind of Flash Gordon version of it, where you've got all these planets and stuff through these space Stargate type things or whatever. Go from we've got the dictator we've got to overthrow to he's been overthrown to kind of sort of forming the Federation of Planets.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
And then does it last? Does somebody strike out on their own, try to be the next Ming? Does not going to go well for them? You know, how does that all play out? There's a lot they could do there.
Yeah, who's the next evil Ming or Sith Lord or whatever you want to call him that mm-hmm. pops up to mess things up?
Yeah. Well, and the way this kind of ends, we get a quick trip back to Earth so Flash, Dale, and Zarkov can kind of be seen as the heroes of Earth, and they kind of get bored there, and it's like, let's go back and fight the good fight or whatever.
Yeah.
It was okay, but I don't know, a little weird.
It was. It started, I was like, oh my gosh, we're just going to forget everything that they were in and go to the, like, almost to the mundane is what it feels like. You know, the mundane world, they're heroes and held mm-hmm. up in esteem, put on a pedestal.
Yep. But, typical hero's journey stuff, yeah.
But then when you get that last page, they're like breaking out of this giant type thing. Let's get the team back together. It ended at a point where I'm like, man, you really didn't have to end here. This thing should keep going. And I know there's probably another miniseries, but did I pick it up? I don't remember. Maybe I did. I don't think I did because, honestly, I think it was a different writer, and I think I liked Jeff Parker back then.
It was definitely a different writer and artist.
Yeah, so it's not going to be maybe as good as what I would have felt, and I probably didn't pick it up because I was like, I had a new creative team. I don't like them. I like this guy.
I'm pretty sure I picked it up. I don't remember much about it, but again, that was, you know, a decade or so back, so I've read a few comics between now and then.
Yeah, the only thing I picked up was the 8 issues and the Flash Gordon annual from that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an annual, which I did not read this time, but they did have an annual for it.
Well, and where they left here, Ming was kind of disposed of, but it seemed like it was just his kind of proxy body and he could easily come back.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. He's definitely coming back. And yeah, the showdown has not happened and you're kind of left with that cliffhanger of the showdown's coming.
Well, I think with Ming, like with the Joker, with Luthor, with Doctor Doom, with various key villains and stuff, or antagonists, you need to have the showdown, they need to be defeated, but they need to be able to come back.
Yeah, if you literally had it play out like they show on here, which I won't spoil it in case someone wants to read this, that would have been a short series, and you're done, you know?
Yeah, once you defeat the big evil and stuff, where do you go from there?
Yeah, you almost have to one-up yourself and recreate the next nemesis, which is a problem that I think they had with, like, Marvel movies at one point. Remember how they kept killing the villains?
Yeah.
And you kill too many villains, and now you're like, okay, we've run through all the quote-unquote good ones. Now you're kind of left with the dregs of the anti-heroes, the villains, the bad guys that are out there, the rogues gallery. That's not a fun place to be.
Well, if you kill the antagonist, you either have to clone them, either literally or figuratively, to get a new person to go fight, or you've got to one-up them and stuff. It's a losing battle if you're not careful.
Yeah, you have to do a time jump, something like that, because those characters are just as pivotal and just as integral to the story as the hero. Sometimes even more so.
I would say more so.
Yeah.
I mean, Flash throughout all of this, as is the case in the movie, and probably all of Flash Gordon, his whole job is to react to Ming trying to conquer the galaxy.
Yeah.
No Ming, no need for Flash.
It's true. Then he's just some guy. It's very true. Like, the best stories are written because of the big evil presence that comes through and we have to save the day. But you don't want to recreate those over and over and over again.
Well, if they're a dime a dozen because you keep cranking them out, then it feels like the hero's on a treadmill, just going around the same lap, defeat, defeat, okay, who's next?
Rinse, repeat.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the better the villain, the better the hero has to be.
Very much true. And usually the best stories require a more powerful villain than the good guys have as the most powerful good guy. Because there has to be someone who can almost deal with the good guy if they're not using their ingenuity and know-it-all and relationships and things like that to be, I got to one-up them. How do I beat them? How do I solve this puzzle?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which every great hero has. Every great hero either has someone they can call or they think of a ingenious way, the writer does, for them to solve the puzzle of how do I take this guy down who's bigger than me.
Yeah. But again, with certain properties, because a particular person is set up as the big bad, not the big bad of the story, but the big bad of the universe.
Yeah.
That kind of grants them effective immortality because there's no story when they're gone.
True.
And Ming, I think, is a perfect example of that.
He is. Because without Ming conquering the other worlds out there, there is no story. There is no need.
If somebody knows only one other name from the Flash Gordon property other than Flash Gordon, it's Ming the Merciless.
That's the one I remembered, Ming.
That's the only one you have to remember. You could tell these stories without Dale. Not saying you should, but you could. Matter of fact, in the Defenders of the Earth cartoon series, I believe they did. You could tell it without Zarkov.
Yep.
Now, whether you should or not, it's another matter, but you can't tell it without Flash. You can't tell it without Ming.
Yeah. And not to beat a dead horse, but to your point, the biggest mistake of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is what happened with Thanos, I think. Because they could have dealt with it a different way, but now every bad is less than. And that's not good.
Flip side, the one thing they did right at the Marvel Universe was not putting Loki out of commission at the end of the Avengers movie.
That is true. Very true. He has a pivotal role he can play.
And look at how many other antagonists they had that were, you know, one and done because they got rid of them.
Yeah, like, oh, who's the robot guy I'm thinking of?
Ultron.
Ultron, yeah, just gone, which is unfortunate. It really is.
I mean, they left an out to where if they wanted to do another Ultron story, they could and stuff. But there are a lot of their threats that get fairly decisively dealt with.
Yep. Yeah, Whiplash.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's numerous. And that's not, I understand it because casual moviegoers, you know, want to see a resolution. They don't want to see an ongoing movie series for the next 32 years, you know?
Yeah, but there's a difference between resolution and finality.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
And I think what they did here in 8 issues resolved Ming attacking Earth.
Yes.
More so than the King's Watch series did, although it did enough of it to end that 5-issue miniseries and then launch this. But this also, again, had the opening to, if they wanted to tell more and stuff, they could have, and arguably probably should have. Again, they did that other miniseries or limited series or whatever it was, but different creative team. And
yeah, but I'll tell you what, this was a book that I'm glad, and I, for the life of me, I don't remember, but Marvin from the book club, who's Viking Joker Online, he picked the series up or something. And at our last book club, he mentioned, hey, why don't we do this as a book club read? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that to me, it just seemed random. He's like, it's a ton of fun. And I was like, oh, yeah, I bought that 10 years ago. But I was glad to revisit it because I feel like I really did enjoy myself and it was a fun read. Is it the best comic I've ever read? No. But is it solid? Yes. I think anyone who picks it up would have a fun time just reading it.
It's very easy read. It's a fun read. It's worth reading. There are places where I got to the end of the issue thinking there could have been a little more in this particular issue or something, or it was more, again, roller coaster than meat and potatoes, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It just felt like some of the story was glossed over. There were a few places they had to dive into some heavy exposition, like what the hell's Ming up to and stuff like that. But again, part of that is it spun out of another miniseries, whatever. It felt like a movie serial from like the 50s or 60s or whatever, where you get a ton of fun character moments, action moments, and all that kind of stuff. It moves the story forward, ends on maybe a cliffhanger, and then come back for the next installment.
Yeah.
Each issue reads well, but maybe not satisfyingly dense, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. It's interesting in that way. It's bizarre. I think it reads better as a whole than it did as single issues coming out.
Yes.
Which is why it's set better for me now, because when you got those single issues, it was so light and breezy that you didn't get necessarily the momentum, or you got the deluge of info dump. And here, it was a nice ebb and flow to where it worked really well.
Yeah, I think there were a few issues here, particularly I think number 5, where they're flying to Skyworld and space and stuff, where if that's all I'd gotten that month for this story, and it would have been, it's like, I want a little more.
That's how I felt. I remember when I read it and it came back to me, I was like, oh yeah, I remember. I was like, oh, this is a little bit boring. But you get those issues where it felt like that a little bit, like, not much happened.
I think the totality is more than the sum of the parts.
Yes, yes. And so this is one of those things that is weird because although I don't want to say it was written for the trade, it reads better as a trade. So I feel like if you're going to read this, it's better that you've read it now than if you would have read it in single issues back in the day. And if you pick it up now, it's just a really fun thing that you could read in a single night, or you can read it over 2 nights if you don't want to spend too much time.
Yeah, you can take as long as you want to read it, but you've always got that next part ready and waiting for you to where if you want more, there's more to be had up until you get to that 8th issue, of course.
Yeah, it left a good enough impression that I came out of it saying, what's Jeff Parker writing now? Which is it's a good sign.
Yeah.
And I also said, oh, Flash Gordon, I like this character, which is weird. You know, I feel like I like the character more now. So, but that's a good thing that it left that kind of impression on me.
Well, I think part of that, though, comes down to the creative team. I mean, Jeff Parker is a solid writer.
Yeah.
Evan Doc Shanner is a great penciler and stuff, illustrator and stuff. And Jordi Belair on the colors did a great job. Things pop where they should and nothing was overpowering or anything like that. It was a very solid creative team.
Yeah, it's a team that if they ever met up again, I wouldn't complain. I'd be very happy. Yeah, they work well together and it was a good job and I'm happy we did this.
Well, and didn't Jeff Parker and Evan Shanner, didn't they do some of the stuff that when DC was kind of reviving some of the Hanna-Barbera properties?
I think they did, and I don't think I picked it up, but it makes me interested in maybe checking that out in the future.
They did a limited series that had Space Ghost and a bunch of these other characters. I forget what it was called, but that was a ton of Future Quest, maybe?
Yeah, Future Quest.
That'd be another thing that'd be fun to do, both as a book club and as a back issue spotlight.
I'm open to it. We'll mention it to the book club people next time we meet, which, at the time of this recording, who knows when it's going up? It's in 2 days.
Yeah, well, we're recording this before the first of the two book clubs that covers this material. I'm hoping to get this out between those two Thursdays. So if this comes out as scheduled on May 13th, the next book club that covers issues 5 through 8 of Flash Gordon would be currently scheduled for the 23rd. But if you want to know when it's really going to be, because sometimes it changes, you got to get on our Slack channel and join in the conversation there, and that's where we post in the book club channel of when we're actually meeting.
Yeah, and the coolest thing, this is something that's really cool, is at the end of every book club, like when we finish a series, literally we sit around, we spitball things to read, you know, or sometimes we'll type in the Slack on the book club channel, and it was, Viking Joker who's like, hey, this was really fun. Let's do this. And here we are. We found kind of like this little gem of this character from the 1930s that I never would have thought we would do a back issue spotlight on, but I'm happy we did.
Yeah, and sometimes what we pick, both for the book club and for the back issue spotlights, sometimes somebody's read it recently, so we're more likely to get a gem. Other times it's like, I haven't read this in a few decades, let's go check it out. And, sometimes those are not as much of a hit as others, you know?
Yeah.
But it's always fun to kind of check the stuff out.
It's true. It's funny because your tastes change as you age, and what you thought was cool when you were 20 isn't so cool when you're 50.
Well, or in the case of some material, I think Miracle Man's a good example of this. When Eclipse was doing it back in the 80s, that was cutting edge, new, interesting material.
Yep.
Now it seems passe and, well, everybody else is doing it. What's the big deal?
Yeah, that's how I felt when I read it. It's like, why is everyone talking about this? But it's hard to mentally take yourself back to the 1980s, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But that's where understanding the world the story entered into at the time is sometimes very important. Again, John Carter is a good example of that. When the movie came out, it was doing things that had been done in Star Wars and literally 500,000 other sci-fi movies. When the property was created 100 years earlier, that was all new, cutting edge. Nobody told stories like that before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you what, Jeff Parker is big time on my radar right now. I enjoyed myself. The next book club, we'll talk about that Future Quest stuff.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun to do.
Yeah, because I'm completely on board, especially if you thought it came off good, because this worked for me. It's different enough that I feel like it's something that, you know, one of those things on my palate has been satiated now that I didn't know was missing.
Well, and Future Quest would also be timely because of the upcoming Space Ghost stuff.
Yeah, perfect timing. Yeah.
But yeah, Flash Gordon here, ton of fun. Like I said, I've got the episode my sister and I did on the movie that'll come out in another week or two.
Awesome. That sounds good.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.